The Rundown, Part 11, A Far Lost Story by John Miro.
Twilight fell upon the darkening road. I found myself again alone. Street lights went out by one, by two, by three. Now reveled in the shadows that had grown. Yes, I reveled in the darkness I'd known.
The light hurt his eyes. That was Nick's first indication he wasn't dead. Then the screaming. High-pitched manta screaming. It hurt too and woke him the rest of the way up. He tried to open his eyes. It took a little doing.
He destroyed an entire cargo hauler, Captain Yates. Knocked it right out of the sky. Does your man even care? He could have hurt or killed people when that ship went down. Have you any idea how much it's going to cost to reimburse Underwood Industries for that hauler? And let me assure you, Bennett, Underwood will get his money out of the city.
Logs show the hauler was empty, Counselor Cree. Zero loss of life, sir. And it was flying on autopilot, slaved to a hijacker who killed one of my men and freed Roland Byrd. And hell, even they survived, and may I add, the hauler was still firing on the pier, actively trying to murder Inspector Usher when he neutralized.
Neutralized! The counselor almost chirped. Your man rammed a police cruiser into a billion Lou cargo hauler and destroyed it.
Nick finally succeeded in rolling an eyelid back just in time to see the counselor for the pier district floating in Captain Yates's face, spit flying like a drill inspector roaring at a raw recruit.
I want his cruiser impounded and a full internal review of his actions.
Willer is his personal craft, sir, left to Usher by his father. It has protected status, grandfathered into military for service during the Civil War, which is why he flies it as his cruiser. We're lucky to have Willer, and we're lucky to have Usher. There is abundant evidence that the ramming was a defensive act, and I won't seize it, nor will I open a review of Usher's actions. If Nick didn't hurt all over right then, he might have chuckled at the sight of Counselor Cree. A tiny, bony creature, even for a manta, with ballast sacks all over his kite-shaped body, facing off against Nicodemus's boss, Captain Yates, a sentient topping 6 feet. Cree had blue-gray skin, mottled all over by brown spots, very close, in fact, to Yates's light brown skin tone. The manta counselor was rail-thin everywhere but his well-padded belly, sagging below his floating form. He looked ridiculous challenging Yates, who'd kept the frame of a riot officer despite his years in administration. Except he wasn't ridiculous. He was a politician. And none of those physical disparities stopped the spotted old counselor from tearing his captain a new one.
He had no way of knowing what that hijacked ship was hauling, or that all the wreckage would fly away from the wall. Sheer luck! He could have put the pier out of commission for weeks.
Nick was in a hospital bed. He could tell by the beeps, the smell, the patches and cuffs wrapped around his body beneath scratchy industrial sheets, and by what he was certain were some pretty choice meds, keeping what should have been a mountain of pain from landing on him. Captain Yates coughed. My inspector destroyed a pirate vessel in commission of an attack that had already taken one life. If the attack had continued, that could have damaged the pier. And Locklaw's economic independence along with it, Captain Yates ground out in a carefully neutral tone. Sir, he added with a curt tip of his chin that could have been respectful or scornful, depending on the recipient's frame of mind.
Don't try to spin the narrative to save your inspector's ass, Counselor Cree roared.
Oh, those aren't my words, Counselor, Yates said, a small smile growing on his face. With a wave, he conjured up a hollow he'd obviously prepared in advance, and the breathless replay of a much more photogenic manta news reporter filled the room.
The scene here on the pier just hours ago, as Police Inspector Nicodemus Usher fought courageously against incredible odds to again defend this city. This marks the second time in less than a year that Inspector Usher's bravery has protected Locklaw. Viewers will remember that it was Usher who saved City Councilor Bennett Underwood from an assassin's blade in front of City Hall during his famous speech opening the controversial economic talks with Haven S.G. The first fruits of those talks arrived this morning in the form of an official delegation from the System Guard-controlled city. The Manta reporter's two tails pointed to inset images on either side of its body. To the left, a blurry still frame of Nick disarming a burly man in peer work clothes with a long, ugly knife. To the right, image from a security camera above the pier showing a freeze frame of Willer blowing through the hijacked Underwood Industries hauler. Kreese snarled and waved one of the graspers beside his mouth through the hollow field, and both images disappeared in a puff of animated smoke. Nick groaned. So Bennett Underwood, Locke Law's beloved human counselor, had come back into his life. If Nick wasn't so tired, he'd be really, really angry. Counselor Kree heard the groan and whipped around, his tail slapping across Captain Yates's chest. Kree pointed a gnarled mouth grasper again. You're twice lucky, Inspector. Bennett Underwood made you his pet for saving his life, and now this? If it wasn't for the media somehow getting their hands on confidential city recordings and twisting the facts! The counselor stared back at Yates for a moment, then returned his glare to Usher. I'd be melting your badge for slag. He whipped around and flew for the door. Bennett may be a counselor now, but he won't be around to protect you forever, Usher. People will see him for the System Guard sympathizer he is soon enough, and you can be sure I'll be on top of you the next time you take the law into your own hands. The old Manta spun again in the doorway, tails twirling dramatically. I'm on record as being against a single System Guard boot setting foot in Locklaw, Yates, but what happens now is all on your head, he warned. If you keep Usher on this and anything happens to his new partner, well, I won't lose any sleep, but you'll lose a great deal. I'll see to it personally. With his ominous threat delivered, Kreese swooped out the door. Nick and Captain Yates watched an orderly on the other side of the room's window yelp and jump out of the counselor's way. The clatter of falling medical instruments followed in the counselor's wake. Nick heard Captain Yates mutter something under his breath that sounded a lot like, corrupt peer rat, as he was struggling to prop himself up on his elbows in the bed. Yates walked over to Nick's bedside. Son, you make enemies like nobody's business. Nick nodded, not particularly enjoying the way everything wobbled in his field of vision. Thank you, Captain. Yates grinned. For not firing your ass like the good counselor wanted? Can't fire a hero. The media would pay too much attention. No, sir. I mean for having that media report queued up and ready. Nick looked up, breathing regularly and counting the aches. How did you know? Kree's on the warpath, and you were a convenient kicking post in his way. Yates sighed. Ever since that thing with Underwood, important people have been paying attention to you, Usher. Too much attention, as far as I'm concerned. I've seen good cops sacrificed before. Luckily, the reporters keep your face out of the media, except for that blurry hero pose when you saved Underwood, and that baby-face graduation photo from the police academy, so you can still get some good work done for me. Yates's jaw clenched defiantly. You're a good officer. You care, you work hard, and your instincts are good. I put all of that on the scale against any politician, and I know where I stand. The look melted into something gentler. Nick knew where the older cop's thoughts had gone. Before he could even begin his condolences, the image of Pesh's ruined body, sprayed all over Willer's insides, filled Nick's mind. There's nothing you could do, Yates said. It's down to that tough ship your father left you, that and a miracle that you even survived out there. Nick pushed Pesh to the back of his mind. He had to function now. He could grieve later. His stomach dropped. Where were his clothes and things? He pulled himself up to sitting. He felt a little tingle in his right shoulder and pulled his hand out from under the sheets. There was a silver exoskeleton fused through the skin of his forearm. Sitting up, he traced the metal over his elbow, up his shoulder, and into his collarbone. Yates gestured at it. Doc say you're lucky to have the arm. You'll have to wear that exo brace a few days while the machines polish you up inside, but you're fit for duty. Nick peered past his elbow and saw his clothes folded on the stand beside the bed. His ID, police lanyard, and holstered weapon were beside them. Where was the... He breathed a sigh of relief when he saw the thin silver chain of his necklace hanging out over one hemmed leg of his pants. There was a skittering at the door. Yates automatically took a step back, and a moment later a horde of insects swarmed up the bed.
"Fit for duty might be a stretch, Captain Inspector,"
the cloud of insects said in a passable imitation of English, given the voice was manufactured from hundreds of hissing thoraxes, papery wings, and rubbing legs.
"I'd recommend you take a break from windsurfing outside the city for a few days."
Nick kept himself still while the jurid nurse surrounded his injured wrist. He made himself watch as tiny proboscis and mandibles nipped and tucked, recorded his heart rate, and did whatever other tests they could do. Even watchful for it, he had no idea which of the jurid's hive bodies had stung him, but then felt liquid warmth and comfort float up his arm. "When can I leave?" Nick asked, amazed, as always, being up close and personal with the thousands of insect bodies that made up a jurid sentient. Most of its tiny component bugs were painted blue and white, the universal colors of medical intervention across Farlost. He looked over the side of the bed and saw several larger, crab-shaped alien insectoids disconnecting tubes and wires that disappeared under the sheets.
"Whenever you like," the eerie chorus of hissing, vibrating, and rubbing body parts said, the tone conveying good humor. "It's not like we had to bring you back from the dead or anything."
A small black body with a glowing rear end hovered in front of his face.
"We would have, though,"
the voice came again from all around the room before descending into an imitation of a whisper.
"We voted for Underwood, and our progenitor works on the pier. Thank you for your service, Inspector Usher."
With that, the tide of insects washed off the bed. Nick leaned to the side, the pain in his head already easing, thanks to whatever the jurid nurse had slipped him. Nick swung his legs around to the side of the bed, reddening a little as he realized there were still parts that needed disconnecting from his privates. Mercifully, Yates turned away and looked out the window.
"Thank you for keeping me on this, Captain,"
Nick said as he performed a particularly sensitive undocking maneuver beneath the sheets.
"There's a man down," murmured Yates. "No question about it."
Nick's body began to sing with energy, just at the right time to distract Nick from Yates's wordless salute to Pesh. He stood, collecting his boxers from the stand beside his bed and stepping into them. "I'm assuming the pier's still locked down." Yates nodded, turning and handing Nick the rest of his clothes.
"It's been almost 2 hours now. I've got unions, politicians, businessmen screaming for my head, so I'll have to open them soon. But we've got enough boots on the ground to keep the net tight now. Bird and his accomplice won't be boarding any ship in Piertown if we have any say."
Nick tossed the pile on the bed and donned his pants and shirt quickly. He marveled how his pain was disappearing faster than Atmo through a leaking airlock. He remembered Counselor Cree's last taunt.
"All due respect, Captain. Task me a few uniforms, but I don't have time to break in a new partner."
Yates said nothing. Nick looked up as he pressed the two halves of his white shirt together, sealing them halfway up. He collected his tie and the silver necklace from the bed, looping the necklace quickly around his neck and sealing the shirt the rest of the way up over top it. The captain was grimacing as Nick flipped up his collar to slip his tie underneath. Nick frowned back as he knotted his black tie on automatic. Something in Yates's look stood the hairs on the back of his neck up.
"What's really up with this partner, Captain?"
Nick reached behind him for his holster, feeling suddenly naked without his service weapon. Both men tuned into it at the same time. The thrum of activity in the busy hospital hallway outside the room had disappeared. Hospitals never got quiet, not like that. Nick grabbed his tan suit jacket and took a step toward the door to investigate. He froze not two steps from the bed. A man in a black uniform blocked the door. Asiatic folds around his eyes, blonde hair and stubble, solid jaw. About as big as Yates, but younger, 30s or 40s true biological age. The uniform drew Nick's eyes back down. His brain reset. He studied it in part since he couldn't make sense of the whole standing here in a Lockla hospital room. Matte black uniform, an absence of color that sucked the light from the room. Form-fitting, armored like Nick's own plainclothes uniform, he had no doubt. Shoulder patch with an insignia he recognized. He skipped over it before his brain reset again.
Belt around the middle with obvious empty areas, no doubt reserved for a holster, ammunition, gear. High collar. Cuffs over the back of the hands, maybe designed for space duty. The armor showed more in the legs, which were sealed into what looked like powered boots. Definitely space duty. But this wasn't a dock uniform. Oh no, not a police uniform. Not a strike team ready suit. Nick saw that familiar insignia again on the man's chest with an ID plate below it. A gold circle, with rays spoking out all around. The Sun Medallion. This time Nick let himself believe what he was seeing. How was it even possible, he wondered, but his mind was already filling in the blanks. Bennett Underwood's talks with Haven SG were getting underway. This was real. This was happening. His lips curled back in disgust. Yates cleared his throat behind him. Nicodemus Usher, meet your new partner. He cleared his throat again. Officer Donald Tyson, System Guard. You have been listening to The Rundown, a far lost story, written by John Miro. Learn more at servingworlds.com. Opening music, Everything Is Not What It Appears, kindly provided by Nate Maingard at natemaingard.com. Closing music, Full On by Kevin McLeod of incompetech.com. If you like what you hear, you can become a patron and support more stories at patreon.com/servingworlds. Thanks for listening. See you next week.